You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I think I'm going to have to try and figure out how I want to frame it, especially when it comes to titling it. I've got an extra couple of days to figure that sort of stuff out. But basically, what I wanted to talk about was taxation in the UK. I'm talking about the UK. Basically, everything I say is going to apply to every other Western economy as well. If you're in Japan, you're 15 years ahead of us. If you're in the US, you've got a few extra levers that you can pull, but the stakes are higher. If you're in another European country, Canada, Australia or New Zealand, it's going to be pretty much the same set of circumstances. So I think this applies fairly broadly because I'm going to be talking mostly about the principles, but I need an example, so I'll be talking about the UK. And the question that I've got to myself on framing this is, you know, on one hand, I could say, well, look, this is Labour making an absolute hash of it, and they are. But also, it's the set of circumstances which Western governments have found themselves, or have put themselves in. Sorry, that they have put themselves in. Now, it's perfectly true that Labour have got a bad set of cards. It's also very true that they are playing those cards incredibly badly, and they're making their hand worse than it needs to be, even with the bad set of cards that they've got. So bear that in mind as I go through this. Yes, it is partly Labour's fault. But I mean, also they inherited a mess. So, you know, we sort of need to acknowledge that as well. Right, so let's jump into taxation. What is tax trying to achieve? Well, at a basic level, there is a core nugget of what a state needs to do. And that is it needs to exist, so it needs to have borders. It needs to be able to repel foreign invaders. It needs to be able to, you know, defend itself as a state. So that is the core and primary function of the state. The second one is that it needs to secure property rights. Because if you then secure property rights within your borders, you allow the possibility of a free market to emerge and do everything else. Now, a state could actually function simply by doing those two things and nothing else. Now, there's a whole debate in libertarian thought about, you know, would it be better if we actually did that? Could things like courts be provided, police, education, welfare, all of those things? The answer is yes, they could be. That's not the model that we've chosen in our modern era. We've decided that, you know, actually all of this needs to be done by the state. But actually, we've got plenty of historical examples that it could be done. Fine, whatever. You know, perhaps not what we're going to discuss today. But those are the core functions of the state. We've also decided in recent years that the job of the state and what taxation is for is not just national defence, courts, policing, you know, critical infrastructure, that kind of stuff. It's going to be redistribution of wealth. we're gonna take money from productive earners and we're gonna give it to unproductive earners, the needy. We've also decided that the purpose of taxation is to stabilize the economy, so we can do all sorts of Keynesian things. We're gonna influence behavior. So we're gonna put, you know, taxes on sinful things like, you know, smoking or generating carbon or whatever else. And proponents would say that taxation is the price we pay for civilization. And the rebuttal has to be, well, okay, fine, at what cost and at what price and what kind of civilization? So let's jump into the first one of those big themes, how taxation changes behavior. If you tax something, you're going to get less of it. So if you tax labor, you're going to get less work. If you tax capital, you're going to get less investment. If you tax profits, you're going to get less entrepreneurship. If you tax hiring, you're going to get fewer jobs. Now, for this, I kind of want to start with an example we've got up on screen. Well, hopefully my editor will put this up on screen. This is a lovely chart of UK payrolls going back. I mean, the actual original chart that I saw went back further than this, but it's the same picture. It starts from January 2003. Payrolls were climbing, and they had been for the last couple of years as well. Lots of blue bars there. And then basically we got Rachel Reeves' budget on the 30th of October last year, and immediately jobs tanked. Why did jobs tank? Well, because she taxed jobs. She put tax on employers' national insurance. And I explained all of this at the time. The moment she did it, I came out there and said, well, what this is going to do is, best case scenario, is it will mean nobody gets a pay rise because employers' capacity on staffing has just been taken away. But more likely what it's going to lead to is job losses. And those can be job losses where it's actually, you know, you're too expensive now, sorry, you have to leave. Or it will be things like, we were going to hire somebody, but actually we're just going to make do. And so jobs are not created, and therefore as jobs roll off for whatever reason, oh, look, I've got pregnant, I'm retiring, I'm going to jail, I'm leaving the country, whatever it is, you get a net job loss. And that is exactly what happened as a result of the incentive structures that Rachel Reeves put out there. And so she's tanking the job market. And it's quite bloody significant. It's something like 276,000 jobs. Oh, here, on the chart it says 250, so 250,000 jobs. I think it's gone beyond that at this point. But yeah, 250,000 jobs in a country that isn't that large a country is a significant number of jobs to lose in just the space of a couple of months as a result of a budget. So, you know, what did she do? It was like 13% on earnings, no, 13.8% on earnings over 9,100. So she increased the threshold and all that kind of stuff. And she put that up to just over 15% or something like that. So it's a meaningful difference. It's a meaningful impact on employers. So what happens? You know, higher cost per hire, fewer hires. You know, wage suppression. Jobs get offshored or automated. Small and medium enterprises are disproportionately impacted because they can't absorb the costs the way the larger corporations can. Big immediate impact on jobs. There is a significant productive penalty in the UK on being productive. There's a top rate of tax of what I think it is 45% on incomes over 125. Much lower than that. You pay 40%, and that kicks in quite soon. A lot of people who, you know, never would think of themselves as being high earners are paying higher rate tax. Effectively, tax plus national insurance, you're over 50%. If you start adding in all the other taxes, you're well over. If you start adding in how much you pay on VAT, council tax, and all the rest of it, you're significantly over. But just tax and national insurance will get you over 50% for most middle class professionals, for whatever extent that we have a middle class left at this point. So, you know, the incentives are to you know, reduce working overtime, promotion, starting businesses, capital gains, that's been pushed as well. That's gone up. It was 20%, and I think that went up to 28%, so a meaningful increase on capital gains. The threshold was lowered from like 12,000 to 3,000. Again, a really material change. And what did it do to tax receipts? You make this really material change, and capital gains tax receipts went up from 12 billion to 14 billion. Okay, so it made like a 2 billion difference. Of course, we immediately spunk that off to Ukraine or putting people up in hotels. But the flip side of having increased capital gains by a couple of billion is now people just don't want to invest. Or if they do invest, they don't want to rotate it out of bad assets into good assets because they're going to get clobbered on the tax. So your bad asset has to be really bad in order to rotate it into something else, which means capital is tied up on unproductive assets. Somebody comes to you and says, look, I'm thinking of starting a business. These are all the things I can do, and it's all very exciting, and I'm going to get this good growth, and you've got it stuck in post office shares or something. You're going to look at it and say, well, yeah, we're going to get clobbered if I back you. So I'll just leave it in the post office to be massively inefficient rather than backing your new thing. And those are the sort of conversations that are going to be happening all over the place. The UK has a tax code which is 21,000 pages. It is the world's longest tax code. The compliance cost for UK businesses is huge. I've seen it estimated at something like 10 to 11 billion a year. And what this is all doing is it's creating this massive opportunity cost of time, talent, money. It's all redirected away from productive uses to compliance. Am I getting my taxes right? Am I minimizing my tax bill? A lot of senior management time will go onto that rather than how can I grow? How can I do my little bit of growing the UK economy multiplied many thousands of times? Sin taxes, fuel duty, VAT, 60% of petrol prices is tax. We're going to tax plastic packaging. We're going to add green levies to your bills. And now 23% of your home energy bill is going in taxes. So, taxes are not used to just fund the state, as perhaps, might have once been the idea. It's to shape personal choices and achieve political goals with a whole bunch of unintended consequences. And it's the dead weight loss, the economic value destroyed when people change behaviour in order to avoid tax. It's something like £1 lost for every £1.20 in tax inefficiency, I think was the number that the OECD came up with. You also push a shadow economy, an off-the-books economy. That is probably 10% of the economy, easily, because it is worth taking the risk of going into the shadow economy and doing things off the books because taxes are so high. So that then doesn't get taxed at all. Wealth migration, thousands of high net worth individuals are leaving. And, this was found out by a survey done by a wealth advisors called Henley and Partners just last year. And when they sampled people and said, why is it that you're leaving? Why are these high net worths getting out? Primarily the reason was tax regime. So, we're squeezing all the pips trying to get as much tax as possible. But then you're making it less possible to get tax because people leave or stop working or stop doing many other things or just don't take up opportunities in the first place. So tax doesn't just change, tax isn't just taking your money. It's changing the way that you live and you work and you think. And sometimes it changes your mind about staying in the country at all. I think at this point, I ought to pivot to talking about lower tax economies. Because it's all very well me saying, basically what I am saying, which is tax is bad. The question then becomes, okay, well, can you give me a counterfactual? Can you give me a different example? And the answer is yes, I can. So Singapore, tax as a percentage of GDP is 14%, and it has consistently maintained low tax and high growth. So it grows strongly. So, I mean, I compiled the 2023 figures for a bunch of places. Singapore, taxes as a percent of GDP, 14%, but growth was 3.6%. You know, excellent, excellent growth for 2023 compared to many other places. And it's maintained that for decades. Ireland, tax revenue as a percentage of GDP, about 21%. Very strong growth over the period. We come back to them. Estonia, flat tax pioneers, tax as a percentage of GDP, about 31%. Again, strong growth. I mean, it's strong growth for current times, 2.7%, but that's well above what we're getting at the moment. Counterfactual that, UK, tax 38% of GDP, growth sub 1%. France is fascinating. France is even higher than the UK, 47% of GDP. So it's got an extra almost 10% on us. Growth is anemic, about 0.5%. You know, it's the highest tax burden in the OECD. So, you know, let's dig in a couple of those. Ireland is a great one. 1987, basically bankrupt, 17% unemployment, emigration crisis, people flocking out. Nobody wants to stay in Ireland. They cut the corporation tax from 50% down to 12.5%. They slashed spending by 10%. They stabilised the currency. What was the result? Well, over the next 10 years, less than the next 10 years, actually, unemployment fell from 17% to 4%. Foreign investment tripled. Intel, Pfizer, Apple, Microsoft, Google, they all set up in Ireland. Tax cuts worked because it was matched by spending cuts and political will. And they had to hit really rock bottom in order to have that revelation. Obviously, they've gone off the rails with immigration lately, but doesn't disprove the point about taxation. New Zealand, another good example. 1984, absolute bloody basket case. They then had a 10-year sort of blitzkrieg reform process, deregulated all their agriculture, privatised telecoms, rail, pensions, a whole bunch of other things. They replaced, they replaced income-linked pensions with individual retirement savings plans. Flat rate of income tax at 15%, was it? Tax rate fell. Oh, no. The tax rate came down from 66 to 33%, the top rate. And more broadly, it levelled out at 15% across the different bands. Okay, what was the impact for New Zealand? Inflation came down from 18% down to 2%, and productivity went up 3.5% a year. Brilliant gains. They shrank the state down from 44% to 35% of GDP. It paid off. You know, it made them wealthy again, wealthy enough to think that they could afford socialism again. And so they got Jacinda Ardern in. So, you know, this only gets you so far because, of course, we have democracies. And as soon as you give the people a little bit of prosperity, they instantly want to destroy it with a bit of socialism. But, you know, there you go. Singapore. Flat tax system. There's no inheritance tax. The low personal tax is, I think, maxes out at 22%. Corporation tax, 17%. A bit higher than Ireland, but it's a low effective rate. They've got a lot of credibility that it's going to remain consistent at those levels. They don't have a national debt problem. The government runs a surplus. Heavy infrastructure spending, all of it from cash, none of it from debt. They have one of the world's highest GDP per capita. GDP growth since 1990, when they sort of set out on this exercise, 4.7%. 4.7% a year, right? What that would have done to Britain if we had done the same thing at the same time. Small state, smart investments, and it is comprehensively beaten a tax and spend economy. Estonia, let's quickly run through that. 20% flat income tax, no pensions. They basically use private citizen accounts, lean bureaucracy, leaning on digital wherever they can. GDP per capita in the space of the 25 years they've been doing this has gone up 8x. We've been flat. US has been, Western world has been flat. They went up 8x. Public debt, it's less than 20% of GDP. They became the EU's, you know, leading digital economy. You know, I could rest my case here, but, you know, why not? Let's dig a bit into France. Highest tax burden, 47% of GDP, as I said. Heavily overregulated labour markets, stagnant productivity. Even before COVID, they had a 30% youth unemployment rate. Sweden managed to hit 60% of tax as a proportion of GDP in the 1980s. Capital flight, stagnation, loss of top earners. They were basically forced to deregulate and reduce spending in the 90s, which of course helped them. Right. So why does this work? Why does it matter? Well, higher after-tax returns, people are going to work, invest, and innovate more. More startups, more inward investments, low unemployment, capital inflows, foreign money chasing yield and security, if they like what you're doing. Ireland, Singapore, you know, show this. Public discipline, if there's no fiscal cushion, that forces the hard choices to be made, a point that I'd like to think that the UK is at, but they're probably going to try and print and borrow out of the current debacle that Rachel Reeves is in, but, you know, leads to less waste, you know, better allocation. There needs to be a good exit threat. If citizens can leave, government must comply. I mean, they can try for a while, but if people were just bailing out, and that is exactly the point that the UK is in now, wealth people are just bailing out, government is going to have to respond to that. And it leads the kind of regime I'm describing institutes spontaneous order throughout the system. You know, local market solutions emerge when the state withdraws. A lot of people think that, oh no, you can't do anything to the NHS because then we'd never have medical care in this country. No, you'll just get the emergence of market solutions. And we can't possibly get rid of education because, you know, if it wasn't the state doing it, no one would ever be educated. All of these functions were done before the state, and they can be done after the state. When it is well, when the government takes less, people build more, they innovate more, they do more. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, low taxes are a magic wand. It requires determination that we are sadly lacking. It requires commitment. It requires belief in your citizenship. But I mean, history has comprehensively shown when you do this, it works. So that's why I wanted to, and hopefully, Mr. Editor, I've got something up on screen here. Right. What I did was I thought, okay, let's go back to 1980 because, you know, in the 1970s, the UK was in a complete, utter basket case. Mr. Editor, if you can pop up on screen my link thing that says or redo it, whatever you want to do. What if we cap tax and spend it 20%? So the premise here, I thought, okay, 1970s, UK is a basket case. Thatcher comes in and she begins what has been referred to as a radical programme. Actually, it wasn't that radical. It was fairly small reforms, but in the right direction, spread out over a number of years. And I just thought, okay, well, let's do a counterfactual. What if she actually was properly radical? What if she came in and had the will and the backing, which she might not have done, but she had the backing to say, okay, from now on, tax and spend is capped at 20%. the tax burden. Now, there's a whole bunch of questions about, okay, how do you tax? Do you use a flat tax? I'm not getting into that right now. All I'm saying is the overall tax burden, somehow, through some combination of whatever tax policies you want to put in, would have been capped at 20%. And state spending capped at 20%. And so what I did is rather than me do this analysis, because I'm biased, I'm a low tax person, I thought what I'd do is I'll get the AI to do it for us. So I described the scenario. So I said, you know, first of all, I went through a whole bunch of examples. So go and find examples of countries that have gone in and radically cut tax and spend. What does it tend to do to them? Then I got it to look up all the figures for the UK from the 1980s afterwards, and then I pared it down to once every 5 years to make it readable. And I said, you know, go off and find me a whole bunch of examples of where the state spending is cut. Because you've got to bear in mind that in GDP, that includes a whole bunch of state spending, right? So if you cut state spending entirely and state spending is half of GDP, you will lose half GDP. So very, very short term, it looks really bad. But then what happens is those resources and money is recycled into the private sector. That gets absorbed, and then those functions are taken over by the public sector. And there are many examples. I mean, the most recent will be Argentina, but there's a whole bunch of them. And I got the AI to, you know, process a whole bunch together and build a framework for analysing how quickly that reabsorption happens. So what you would expect to see in the model, and it is actually what happened. I mean, I didn't tinker with this. I just said, you know, this is what I'm looking for. Put these elements together, build a framework, right, and then model out. So counterfactual, hopefully you should see this on the screen. 1980, tax as a percentage of GDP was 32%. And in my hypothetical, I'm just going to say, no, whack it down to 20%. Nominal GDP is what it is, and this is the starting point, so it's going to be the same. Tax take. Tax take is going to take effect instantly. So the tax gets whacked. So the tax take would have come down in 1980 from 75 billion to 47 billion. So it's a meaningful increase. You would have had to have chopped a whole bunch of things. Probably would have had to got, well, I mean, you basically would have had to got rid of half of everything. You know, half of the NHS. So, you know, you're only getting it if you're, if you can't pay and you're really in need, you know, make your own provisions. Otherwise, you know, half of you aren't getting state education. So private education would have to have scaled rapidly. Welfare. I mean, you've got to bear in mind that all of these functions, education, welfare provision, education, health, all of those things were provided in the free market prior to World War II anyway. You know, they just got taken over. So the UK would have certainly easily had the muscle memory in order to do this. In fact, even in 1980, PPP and Bupa, private healthcare providers, existed. You know, they could have scaled up. So a whole bunch of things would have had to have been cut in this scenario, but there's certainly the mechanism for this to be done elsewhere. So, you know, carrying on with my hypothetical, real GDP growth, in the real world, the historical example, it was 2.2%, which is, I mean, we'd kill for 2.2% these days. But the model, and I think this is probably pessimistic, but, you know, the AI, you know, pushed that up to 5.2%. I think that's right. I think it would have been at very minimum that. And then basically I got it to run through. Now, what we're expecting to see on this, what I'm expecting to see, because this is what all the real-world examples are, is yes, you take a hit initially, because you cut out that element of state spending, state GDP, and you're waiting for those resources to be reallocated into other things. Now, I think this would happen fast. We did do a bit of this post-2008 in this country with the George Osborne and the austerity and stuff. And actually what we found is that the private sector absorbs that capacity extremely quickly, like 18 months. Now, the AI model that was put together, and I didn't want to tinker with it because I thought, you know, just leave it as it is and show it as an example. So I think the AI model is being overly cautious. The AI model is showing that that absorption takes best part of 10 years. I think it would be much, much quicker than that. But nevertheless, fine, let's just have a look at it. Let's see what it came up with. So by 1985, the tax revenue collection has actually kind of started to come back because the growth is kicking in. So nominal GDP, the hypothetical world, isn't actually that far behind because it's been absorbed and it's had now 5 years of a higher growth rate. The tax take is, of course, still down because now, you know, nominal GDP is still roughly the same, or the hypothetical is still slightly behind it, but the overall percentage is lower. So you're still being very cautious on your spend. But I mean, look at that. The tax take in 1985 would be 71 billion against where we started in the real world example of 74 billion. So I mean, it's perfectly manageable. You can, I mean, it's just not that mean, is it? Right, by 1990, tax revenue percentage of GDP is still, of course, significantly lower. That's the whole point. But nominal GDP, still suffering a bit in this example because we've knocked out the state. Again, I don't think it'd be that bad. Taxes have been rising, and so the tax take is still below. But the important thing is the growth is significantly higher. Again, I think it would be at least that. I think the Singapore example and all the suppressed demand and the ingenuity of the British people, 3.7% is the absolute minimum, but fine, not tinkering with the model. By 1995, nominal GDP in this very conservative model has now overtaken the historical example. The tax take is lower, but not that materially lower. It's, you know, it's 208 billion versus 166 billion. And still the growth rate is absolutely stonking. It's, you know, 5.8 versus 2.8. You know, it's got that premium on top of the historical example. By 2000, nominal GDP is now comfortably passed. We're in a period of slightly higher taxes here again. And so the tax take is now up to 230 billion as opposed to 310. The thing you've got to remember, though, is even though the tax take is lower, we're now in a world where a lot of the previous functions of the state are being done in the private sector. You know, you've got a more robust private health system, you've got a more robust private pension system and education system. And actually, most people who could choose would probably be choosing the private alternative rather than the bog standard state version, which we all get anyway, given today. By 2005, what have we got? We're now over 100 billion, 150 billion ahead in nominal GDP. Tax state, you see, even on a limited 20% basis, it's still a very comfortable 315 versus 440. GDP was still growing growth. And we're just going to watch this trend continue. So we're 500 billion ahead in nominal GDP by 2010. We are coming up for a trillion ahead in nominal GDP by 2015. By 2020, I mean, it's just absolutely racing away. So historical example, nominal GDP of 2.1 trillion versus here getting on 3.5. Meaningful difference. People of Britain would be significantly wealthier, that the state would be doing less, although interestingly, the tax take has now surpassed the tax take in the historical example. Because, yes, it's only charging 20% of GDP as opposed to 32%. But because GDP is now so much larger as a result of the lower burden, your tax take, you actually have more. And you need to do less. So that means the things remaining in the state sector could be done so much better. You know, let's say we're providing school vouchers to the poorest half of the population, because we binned half of it in the initial example. That voucher system can now be quite good, or extended up to your more middle-income people. Not that they need it, because they're earning so much. We could have a proper military. We could have a really nicely done court and police system. You know, we could potentially even have border controls. You know, fancy that, as opposed to what actually happened in 2020 with the Boris wave. The other thing I should point out about 2020 is in the real figures, in the historical examples, there was a big GDP contraction as a result of the lockdown madness. I just went ahead and assumed that any government that is sensible enough to operate policy like this is not going to do something as batshit crazy as lockdowns. So I just zeroed that out because I didn't even take the higher growth. I just thought, no, just zero it out, because the rest of the world might have gone crazy, but if we didn't, you know, we at least zero it out. And by today, difference is just insane because you're getting this higher growth. Growth rate has been suppressed. I don't know if it necessarily would be, because we're in a global debt crisis. We probably wouldn't be participating in that. Because bear in mind, because tax and spend was both limited at 20%, we would have kept the 1980s level of debt. We would not be in a debt crisis that we're in today. That all would have remained consistent. GDP, in actual, it's 2.8 trillion, but in our hypothetical, it's 4.6 trillion. Hugely larger economy. We would all be significantly wealthier people. We wouldn't have had to have done the insane stuff that we've done. So, you know, this is a counterfactual of what the world could have looked like if we had introduced something like this back in the 1980s, and we would be a significantly richer country. Why don't we do something like this? Well, because, as you can see, the benefit comes, well, in this example anyway, I think it would be quicker than this, but it's the benefits generally don't come up by the next election. The benefits really come through when the next generation is entering the workforce. That's the difference. And that is why we can't have nice things. If the UK was not a democracy, you know, if it was, you know, a damn dictatorship, I were to be running this, I'd just take the hit short term. Yeah, people are going to grumble. A lot of state employees are going to be out of a job. GDP would go down. Other countries would point and laugh. One generation later, and the effects would be enormous.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.